sister city relationship started in 1988 when 20 unusual travelers together who were all in went to Russia to select a sister city. And we selected Vladimir because it was accessible from Moscow. It was a safe place. We thought it was similar to Bloomington Normal in many ways. But what was lost in translation is when they translate numbers, footprint of Bloomington Normal and Vladimir Russia are the same, except they have 350,000 people and we only have 125. But the numbers, when you go through translation, sometimes numbers don't translate right. And so, but it was wonderful. And so in 1992, In 1991, in December, when the camarada from Wesleyan came back from their trip to Vladimir, there was a request for humanitarian aid. And the sister city organization rose to that occasion. And even though we didn't know quite how to do it, or didn't have any clue, if you want the truth, but we incorporated people that were willing to help, such as Bromen provided a parking lot, and WJBC helped us with some advertising. And in less than 3 months, we collected $500,000 worth of unused medical equipment that could not be used or would not be used in this community, and we took it to Vladimir.
Now, this is at a time when relations were very sensitive.
It was the beginning of perestroika.
Right.
And thus none of us really knew what was going on. But we did have, because our relationship started earlier, there were a couple of people that said that they would help us. The person that was my counterpart, Helen Vladimirova, is an orthopedic surgeon, and I had written a blind letter that was in 1990 to be delivered to either a nurse, which I am, or to a female physician. And it was. I didn't know at the time that there was her specifically that the person had in mind to deliver it to. She hadn't used her English for 20 years. And so the first time we were together, we really didn't communicate. We just kind of looked at each other. But there was a chemistry, and the rest is history. She really stepped forward and opened lots of doors for us.
The book is A Journey, Teaching, Learning, Culture, 1992 to 2008. This is a firsthand look from Jana Edge at the program that was a medical exchange, basically, between our Twin Cities and Vladimir, Russia.
Correct.
When was the first exchange trip? Like when you actually
1992 were taking. Okay. Was the first medical exchange. And then we had every year after that, we did the humanitarian aid for 2 years. But we couldn't afford that. And transportation costs were exorbitant. USAID would not pick up the transportation shipping costs. And so we determined we wanted to maintain this medical exchange. And so we switched to education. And so it was physicians and nurses, hospital administrators. There was, that was affordable because our wonderful community people, I would go to them and I'd say, this is what has been determined mutually. Because every time when I came back, I would have an itinerary of what we were to accomplish on the next trip. So it wasn't this that we said, this is what we're going to take to them. This is what they wanted to learn, or they wanted to share, or they wanted to discuss with an American counterpart. So it was mutually respectable.
How would you describe the medical situation in Russia when you first arrived? What was it like compared to something we would experience here?
In my very first trip in 1992, I got Dr. John Stutzman, who is a Bloomington Normal urologist, to go. He had just retired, and I wanted him to go with eyes to help me determine what the medical equipment situation was that we saw. Russia is a male-dominated society, even though most of their healthcare people are women, physicians and nurses, but it's a male-dominated. So I had to have a male person, a physician, in order to get through the door. And So he did. And what he saw, John had retired, but what he saw was equipment that he had used in medical school. So we determined that they were at least 1940, 1945 in much, much of their medical equipment.
Were they wanting your help? Were there times where
they
you felt
didn't
like...
didn't really... It was an interesting relationship in that they watched us. We were a secular group, and it took us 3 years to convince them that we were not missionaries, because missionaries made, from this is what they told me, missionaries make promises and they don't come back. We went back to Vadimir at least three times before they were convinced, yes, when you make us a promise, you will deliver. And so our motto was, limit our promises, but over-deliver. And so by then, we were bringing them here, and we were following through with what we said we would take there.
Jana Edge, our guest this morning on WJBC, talking about a medical exchange program, education, actually. It's called, the book that she wrote is called A Journey, Teaching, Learning, Culture. And it's between the Twin Cities and Vladimir, Russia. And you were boots on the ground.
We were boots on the ground.
You were physically there. You were meeting these people. You were working with your colleagues there, making these cultural connections. Because I'm going to guess there were a lot of disconnects.
There were, because this is where my gray hair really helped. I graduated from nursing school in 1961. And so healthcare really changed a lot come 1970. But I was originally educated with some of the equipment and some of the techniques that they were still using. And so John Stutzman and I would laugh about the fact that because we were older, it was helpful. It gave us an understanding rather than saying, oh my goodness, how can you do this? But the number one thing was that we had to be respectful. We didn't go to educate them. We went to communicate. We went to form relationships. We went to gather understanding. And if I can bring away anything over the 18 years that I went, culture was our major problem. We worked with young students, and they expanded their vocabulary because medicine has a language of its own. But because it's those in medicine have root language of Latin, it was able to do this. But we did a lot of following. We did a lot of looking. We did a lot of sharing on a simple situation, such as... I remember John Stutzman, as a urologist, they would say to him, when you sit down to do a cystoscopy, how many cystoscopes do you have? Well, he was embarrassed to say, I have multiple. For them, one size fits all.
Oh.
And so, you know, we had to be careful because we needed to be respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what was most important. I think that being respectful in our Bloomington Normal medical community, whether it was the hospitals or the physicians or the nurses or the ancillary medical partnerships that we had, they all rose to the occasion to be helpful. And I would go to them and say, I would like you to come with me for 2 weeks. I want you to pay your own way. You will work a 12-hour day, and if you have any fun, it will be an accident. And you cannot take your significant other or your spouse along because this is a professional working delegation. And I never went for lack of people that would go and help.
Jana, were there times that you thought maybe you wouldn't be allowed to come back, or there were scary moments
process? In 1993, I took my largest delegation, and it was 13. And at that time, I was doing all of the visas. And when they came back, I had all the passports. We didn't have to send passports then. I just had to put the visa inside. When they came back, I put all the visas in the passports and handed them to the delegation. Now, the medical delegation was there for 2 weeks, but Orly, my husband, and Mac Bone and Lotus Hirschberger were going to come the following 2 weeks because they were going to work with the Vadimir University in mathematics. So I was going to stay for two more weeks. So I did. My medical delegation came back, and I stayed. So then when we all went to come home 2 weeks later, Orly and Mac and Lotus went through, and I they won't let me through passport control because my visa was expired by 2 weeks. I had not checked my documents close enough. I was so naive that I thought that if it came from the embassy, it would be okay. And so I had to tell Orly that he had to fly because his visa would run out that day because, of course, he was going to stay. And I said no. And they told me that after the plane took off, they would take me to the consulate and we would discuss it. And this is at 5 o'clock in the morning. And so I just was sent to the basement of Sheremetyevo, the airport, to pick up my luggage because they wouldn't let my luggage go either. I had given my money to Orly. Silly me. I'd never traveled alone before. And so after the plane took off, they came and got me and took me up to the consulate. And they asked me what I was doing, and I just explained that I had been careless, that I had not checked the dates. I was there on a medical exchange. They had gone home. I owned the whole problem. And they never did look me in the eye, but they said, well, we'll see. They said, when do you want to leave? And I said, as soon as possible.
Yesterday.
Because I knew that if I got to Frankfurt, I mean, I'm an older woman, and there wasn't a lot of money, and the Sheremetyevo airport is dark at night. And it wasn't, and I did not have language. So it wasn't wise. It wasn't a time for a 55-year-old woman to be traveling without language in Russia alone. So in the middle of the day, I went back up, and they said they thought they could get me on the 7 o'clock flight out that night. And so I did. But as I was going through the last gate, they held my passport again. They had forgotten to put the stamp in it.
Why?
But, you know, Orly and I were so naive, we didn't know that all of this is confidential information. So he didn't know where I was. So I had 2 days later, he picked me up in Chicago just by chance because he hoped that I would be on that late night flight. And I was.
I don't know how he didn't lose his hair.
Well, you know. He's been married to me a lot of years, I guess.
Where's your wife? She's in Russia being detained for paperwork. There came a point in working with these women, because mm-hmm. many of the people you worked with in medical care in Vladimir were women, where you noticed something wasn't right, and you asking questions landed you in a very uncomfortable situation.
We would see these women, whether they were nurses, some of them were with physicians, we would see them and on the street, women with trauma to their face, particularly. And we were asking the question, is this domestic violence? And we were told, no, we don't talk about that. And it was during the time that domestic violence was beginning to be talked about and being assessed differently, even in Bloomington Normal. So we finally got some to say yes. It is domestic violence, but we don't talk about it. Because the culture was, if women behaved better, there wouldn't be a problem. Also, they didn't have any choices, because if they left their husband, most apartments are in husbands' names, and so there were no shelters, there was no place to go. So I determined that we needed to talk to the chief of the militia. Well, my friend, Helen Vladimirova, who was my counterpart, thought that I had totally lost my mind, that I wanted to talk to the chief of the militia. But she arranged it, and we thought we were just going to talk with him and two or three people. And instead, we were ushered into a room where there were 70 police officers, men and women. And so I proceeded to tell the story of domestic violence in America and how expensive it was to our healthcare system and to business and what it did to women and men's self-esteem. And I could see the nodding and the agreement. The chief was very pleasant. He stayed for 2 hours and listened to it also. in retrospect now, we can, or going forward, we can now see that there are some shelters. There is an establishment of a hotline. It's not 24/7 as we are blessed to have, but they are having an awareness. And now in the emergency rooms, domestic violence is at least asked about if there is unexplained facial trauma or unexplained injuries to women. So it was helpful to say, yes, that's a serious problem in America. And yes, it was difficult to bring everybody on board because it wasn't, you know, a domestic violence in Bloomington Normal was addressed by volunteers. And it was a couple of years before they felt, our local police force felt that it was okay to have volunteers working because domestic violence was police business. And so we could share that it was mutual in both countries and that we had to work together and that building a healthy community takes healthcare people, it takes business, it takes the police, it takes teachers, it takes everyone to build a healthy community. And one of the major things that we believe that we did is that in Russia, everybody works in a silo. And so during our conferences, which we had over a number of years, we brought these silos together. And so social workers who had never spoken with police, with the militia, healthcare people talked with the militia, but only in the emergency rooms. We brought them together and started to do some problem solving. And that was, that was our goal, to build a healthy community, not to say this is the way you should do it, but build your own model.
Were you afraid that maybe you were under arrest when you walked into that room with 70 officers?
No, because...
Because your friend was mad at you. She was
very upset with me. I mean, she said, nobody comes here by
choice.
And here you're making... And as we walked in, I could see her looking right and to the left, thinking, if we need to make a mad dash. But no, I never did. And Beth, that was what was so wonderful. I believe that as a professional, as an American, if you are polite, if you are patient, if you are willing to laugh at yourself, great things can be accomplished. They may not be expedient, but you are building relationships. And this is what Dwight Eisenhower thought at the beginning of the sister city relationship development, is that if only through peace we will only have peace if we have an opportunity to communicate and show each other who we really are, that we aren't going to be overpowering each other.
And you'll be nominated for Secretary of State in the next administration. Jana Edge, thank you for sharing your story. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And if people want to check out this book, I know there's a copy at the McLean County Museum of History now because you donated one.
At both of the libraries.
Great. So if people want to look at that and go through, there's some photos that you share of this community and Vladimir.
Right. Many, many names of people that you will know in this community are listed in the book. And it's not just facts and figures. There's some funny stories.
Bloomington and Normal Public Libraries have a copy of A Journey, Teaching, Learning, Culture by Jana Edge.